Thank you, Dr. Lawless. Well, it is good to be with you folks today. My name is J.D. Payne. I direct the Church Planting Center here at Southern Seminary. And I want to introduce our speaker to you this morning. You can see him there on the list. Dr. Dan Morgan's a good friend of mine. He is at Southwestern Seminary. He's basically my counterpart at Southwestern. He directs their Church Planting Center there. He's a professor of missions and church planting. I've known Dan for about 4 years now and aggravate him all the time. I don't say this lightly when I say this. I was sharing this with one of my classes yesterday. He was speaking in one of my classes. I truly do believe that that Dan is one of the best strategic thinkers in North America today. And so it's a treat and it's an honor to be able to have him with us here today at Southern. We are audioing this and videoing this as well. And we're going to put this on our website and make it available to you for free as well. And so if you've got folks in your association, in your churches, in your state that you would like to show this to later on, just give us a little bit of time and we'll get it up on our website. And if you will contact the Church Planting Center at the seminary here, same place that you RSVP'd, we'll get you that address so you can get to that information. I do want to introduce one other person to you, my secretary. She's the one that put all this together and got this organized, and she is the person that you've probably spoken to on the phone or through email, Carrie Plevin. She's down here in the front. Thank you very much, Carrie, for putting all this together. Let me read a passage of Scripture, and then Dr. Morgan is going to come, and today he's basically going to go about 50 minutes to an hour. Then we'll stop. We'll take a break, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. The restroom is down this hallway on the right. There's actually a cafeteria below us that has coffee. There's a coffee shop down the hall on the bottom floor if you need coffee as well. We are providing a pretty simple lunch for you today as well. And so give you an opportunity to be able to hang out and maybe network with some new faces, meet some new people, touch base with some old faces, and be able to talk through some of these issues that Dan will be sharing with us today. So let me share a passage of Scripture with you, because this is really what we're thinking about today, and that is regional church multiplication strategies. Paul, in 2 Thessalonians, writes in chapter 3, "Finally, brothers, pray for us that the message of the Lord may spread rapidly and be honored, just as it was with you." Let me read that one more time. "Finally, brothers, pray for us that the message of the Lord may spread rapidly and be honored, just as it was with you." Dan, I'm going to invite you to go ahead and come on up. And as he comes, since we are recording this, I'm going to be around the room with this microphone in hand. And so I think he's going to allow for a little Q&A time as well. So if you have a question, I'm going to just put your hand up and I'm going to run to you and give you this microphone so we can get your lovely voices on our tape as well. So thanks, Dan.
Great. Thank you. It's a privilege to be here. I'll say ahead of time that I've got flyer's ear, whatever it is. My head's so full of fluid that I can't hear very well. So if you tell me your name and I don't quite catch it, that's why. I'm not actually deaf, not quite that old yet. But I wanted to talk today about something that is of great concern to most associations, and that is how do we create a situation where we have substantial growth in the number of churches that are behaving in a missional way, that they're willing to sponsor new churches. It's been a struggle for Southern Baptist associations for a number of years. We see addition of churches, but we don't see multiplication. And so from my experience, I've participated in at least one situation where I have seen that kind of multiplying growth in the number of partners that are willing to sponsor church plants. The situation we face, you can see on the PowerPoint slide. I was a strategist in the Pacific Northwest for 5 years, followed by work at Saddleback as a missions pastor for another 3 years, training church planters from all over the U.S. and the world. And then in Texas at Southwestern Seminary. But what we've seen is that there's, when we don't have a multiplying strategy for increasing churches, we see stagnation. When I worked at the Northwest Baptist Convention, I was a strategist for the Willamette Valley, parts of Oregon and Southwest Washington, we had about 450 churches. That was 13 years ago. And in talking with them recently, they were reporting that they have about 450 churches. That's 13 years without really any substantial change in the number of churches which are ministering to the population, even though the population in those 13 years has grown substantially. I don't know what the situation is in your particular ministry location, but I would suggest that in the last 13 years there's been substantial growth in your ministry scene. And the question we have to ask is, has there been a corresponding increase in our capacity to minister to lostness in those areas? If you you can say, well, Lambeth Valley was where I went, and in that situation, there had been no church plants for a decade. Bluebonnet Association, where one of these case studies is set, when Dr. J.K. Minton went there, the association was in financial difficulties, I think probably to the point they were really struggling, not being able to see an increase in budget, not being able to really see a growth strategy. And yet, they hadn't any work, new work in 7 years. There were a few old churches. That kind of thing is a problem for us. If you'll allow me to talk about associational ministry capacity, it's sort of like the sand table. You guys have seen the illustration of the table, and you pile sand on it. And the sand can only pile so high based on the size of the table before the sand begins to run off. And you can pour as much sand on the top as you want, but its capacity is the size of the table. And I would submit to you that our work in associations is similar. Our work in churches is similar. We have a certain capacity based on, in the case of the church, the number of members of our church that are actively ministering to the circle of relationships that they know. Now, that may be great, it may be small, but when you total it up for a church, that's the church's ministry capacity. And what we really want is we want that church's ministry capacity to constantly be increasing, or that church to be planting other churches, so that by starting new life, there's an increase in the ministry capacity overall in whatever region we have a stewardship for. But churches older than 10 years tend to be stable, not showing signs of growth. In fact, many of them are in slow decline. The statistics for the Southern Baptist Convention are that we have something like 70 to 75% of our churches are plateaued or declining. I know of one association in Oklahoma, and their director of missions reported to me that they have 75% of their churches are plateaued or declining. 24% of their churches are growing by transfers from the churches that are plateaued and declining. And 1% of the churches are growing by evangelism. That's a pretty desperate situation. Without church planting, associations stagnate, because the majority of their churches are older, they're stable, the ministry capacity of that association stagnates. And really, the only way that we see significant increase in the ministry capacity of an association is through church planting. But how do you get churches to see that, to embrace it, and to begin to sponsor additional churches in a significant way that results in the growth of the ministry capacity of the association through new units, new churches? That's really the topic today. Story one is Bluebonnet Association. Dr. J.K. Minton arrived in 1999. Prior to that, I had worked with him in the Pacific Northwest. He was the director of missions for the Baptist Association that incorporated about seven counties, making up the Portland metro area, the Columbia Gorge. And when he went there, they were in pretty desperate financial shape. They had a mortgage with a balloon payment on their associational office that was going to come due in about 5 years and no plan to pay for it. So they were bankrupt and didn't know it. When he left them with about $500,000 of endowment towards church planting and ministry. So he's done a good job. He knows what he's doing. He left there to come to the Bluebonnet Baptist Association, which was in sort of similar situation. You can see there was one seven-year-old Anglo plant still on support after 7 years. There were two old Hispanic missions on support. And there were a few churches, three or four, who were willing to sponsor a new church. That was the situation when he went there. They had a total of about 60 churches in that association. That association covers territory from Austin to San Antonio, hill country in there. New Braunfels is the center of it. There's probably about four or five, maybe six counties that they cover parts of. So a fairly large territory. I don't know how that compares with your associational territory, but I would assume that anything outside a major urban area is probably similar or comparable to what he was facing. There was a status quo growth. Occasionally, a maverick pastor would come into the area. He would plant a church and then call the association and say, "I'd like to affiliate." Occasionally, a fight in one of the churches would become severe enough that they couldn't reconcile and they would split. So we had a church plant. You know, that's the traditional Baptist way of planting churches, is splitting. And it's worked for, you know, 100 years or more, so why give up a good working strategy? So what was needed, as he analyzed the situation, was a strategic plan. Now, he saw that there were three kinds of plants happening. One is a clone. One was sort of state-forced. Now, if you're here from the state, I mean, no offense by that, but you have an agenda, and sometimes it's not the same as the agenda of the association. Okay, we can at least agree on that, that sometimes you're in full agreement, sometimes less than full agreement. And then there's a partnership style of church planting, which he and I had pioneered in the Pacific Northwest, built around a covenant. Now, the clone works well if you have a large church, and they can give 100 members, and the target community is just like the community where that large church has been so effective. But when you're committed to kingdom growth, to churching a region, to reaching a whole region for Christ, what we know for sure is there's diversity of people groups, of situations, of socioeconomic climates. And in that situation, a clone is not very adaptable. If you put a cloned church into an area where it's not adapted to the cultural or the subculture you're going to encounter, then you're not going to get good results. The state forced plant, where they want to partner with the North American Mission Board and the association is hesitant, but there's some pressure there and they go along, sometimes that creates resentment on the part of the local churches and it doesn't advance the cause of partnering for missions. So that's a drawback. Basically, one partner is calling all the shots rather than being a true participation by all the partners. So the last one, partnership that we had seen work pretty well, keeps ownership in the hand of the local churches by making them partners in the process. And that was his preference. So he was committed to forming partnerships. And he identified three critical issues that I think you also face that have to be a part of any strategic process that's going to multiply churches through partnering. The first is outside pressure. They needed to form a partnership with at least three local churches or majority local churches so that they would be able to resist outside pressure towards an agenda that wasn't in the best interest of this church plant. Because partners bring agendas. whether it's the local churches themselves, or it's the association, or it's the state convention, or it's the national mission board, there are agendas. And sometimes they're not in the best interest of the plant. The second was project control. The partnership shares control so that no one partner can dictate conditions for the plant. All of the partners have to agree. This diminishes the power of private agendas and creates more of a level playing field for the planter and for those that are going to partner. The third critical issue is the planter's freedom and accountability. How you work that out. What we'd found in the Pacific Northwest is there was a need to have qualified church planters, and once you trust the church planter theologically and you trust him that he's wired to do church planting, he needs to have the freedom to execute the strategy God's laid on his heart, but with accountability. So there has to be that balance. You have to keep it in tension. Selection of a trustworthy, capable planter, freedom to implement a strategy with a covenant accountability to a strategic planning team. Now, I'll get into that more. That is one of the key components of strategic planning team. That's what we call the partnership. Here were the results. First, strategic planning team, they violated the principles I've just talked about. A particular pastor of a larger church had a former youth minister that he really wanted to plant a church, and he was insistent, and so they said yes, and so they formed a strategic partnership with this guy planting the church. It failed. He was not qualified to plant a church. So their first attempt didn't have a good result. In 2002, they looked at a guy, Corey Webb, and they assessed him. He assessed well. They formed a partnership, and he's been one of the real success stories early on in that association as far as planting a church that's been theologically conservative, it's been methodologically creative. It's a little on the edge towards country western. It's everyday Christian fellowship. And in all honesty, when the partnership heard what name he wanted to give the church, they were like, that's strange. Every day. But as Corey has used that name to expand the influence in ministry, it's worked out really well. He has all kinds of catchy phrases he can use with every day. You know, an everyday Christian, you know, you can go on and on and on. It's turned out that Corey's hunches about what to name the church, you know, his prayerful hunches, have worked out. It's been a good thing. So that was a success. Now, 2003 to 2006, with a process prototyped, they were able to plant four churches a year. This is on a base of 60. Four churches a year. Now they have 18 total churches that have been added. Two failed, seven are self-supporting, one's not supported. We'll talk about that in a minute. And the rest are in some form of phase down. 60% of the churches of the association now help to sponsor church plants. This is from having three or four churches to a 60% participation ratio. I don't know how your association is, but 60% participation in church planting is phenomenal. Okay, it's a tremendous success. And all plants become partners in new projects. The way the system is set up is that you're constantly creating new partners as you plant churches because the system is set up to help them get church planting into their DNA and partner early. And we'll go into the details of that in a bit. So the particulars are he uses a two-year phase down. It helps. And if it looks like the church is not going to be self-supporting at the end of 2 years, then they have a process. They can usually tell at the end of 1 year based on growth projections, finance projections, whether they're going to be self-supporting. So at the end of a year, if it looks like it's not going to be self-supporting, they begin to coach and counsel the church planter about how to shift to a bivocational church plant. And at the end of 2 years, they've ended the project, although sometimes the state will still participate in particular projects to help new churches expand quickly. So there's still some state money that comes in from time to time, but the project winds down after 2 years. This gives them a, I guess you'd say from business terms, it's a fixed risk. They are not going to have a seven-year plant that's still on support. The church planter understands that they're being given an opportunity to plant a New Testament church, but it's not a guarantee of income. They're expected to, through evangelism and ministry, to grow that church to the point of self-support. Now, let me say a word about context. In Texas, 2 years is a reasonable length of time. I'm not saying that in your situation that your projects would be two-year projects also. The point, though, is that it's a fixed window. Whatever is reasonable, the church planter understands that we're going to work within this window to help you plant a church. If it looks like in your context it's not going to happen, we'll help you shift over to more of a bivocational support base. That's the point of it. Right now there are seven churches somewhere in the process with four more scheduled for 2007. So they're continuing the pace of four churches a year. Now at some point, with this kind of addition, they'll have the capacity to expand that four churches a year to something more. Over time, your ministry capacity increases, which is the point that we started with. It's rather than a church association that is stagnant and unable to increase its ministry as the population of the association's area increases, we have a situation where growth is occurring, where ministry muscle is increasing, where missional heart is increasing. Now, this is a funded process, so the number of plants depends on state and association funding ability, and this is a limiting factor. In the last section of this morning, we'll talk a little bit about how do you hit actual, you know, multiplication at a rapid rate, and part of it is you need to have additional strategies that don't depend on state and association funding. I think it's possible. We'll talk about some possibilities. And it's reproducing. I saw what was happening there and sponsored a seminar, I think it was in 2004, for select ADOMs who were interested in shifting their association from stable to expanding. There were about 10 or 12 of them that came to this by invitation event. And Dr. Minton presented his system. Jim Gatliff was an associate DOM in charge of strategy for two associations in north central Texas. He came and he picked up on JK's process and it made sense to him, and he went back and he looked at it and he customized it for his particular setting. Again, it's an important principle. This is not something I'm advocating you clone. This is something I'm advocating you think about and customize to your situation, so that we can have a large number of associations nationwide that are expanding their ministry capacity. So he systematized it, and he's more committed to putting things down on paper as a process than Dr. Minton is. Dr. Minton is a little more entrepreneurial, and if you know anything about entrepreneurs, they're better at creating chaos than order. Okay? That's a good thing. It's a good thing. If you have entrepreneurs, you know, bless their chaos, and just find organizers to sweep up after him. Now he's training other associations in his system because he took the time to figure out how it would work for him. He wrote it down. He created a process. So JK's system is reproducing. So let's look at his story. Jim is a longtime Texas pastor who became the associate ADOM for two associations in 2004. These associations had no strategy. He was hired to establish one. He attended JK's training. and began to formalize an approach around what he saw as four milestones to effective multiplying church sponsorship. So here's his four milestones. You need the right place. And to do that, he has a system of developing a list of sites for plants. He does windshield surveys, demographic studies. People report to him where the need is great for a new church. You need the right planter. There has to be screening and matching of a planter to a particular site. He gets his planters from churches, from the seminaries, from colleges, wherever he can find qualified people. He needs the right partners. Partners include, similar to Dr. Minton's system, the local churches, the association, the state, the North American Mission Board, and in addition, whereas Dr. Minton sticks almost exclusively to local partners, Jim recognized the need in his situation for outside partners who had a missions heart and the ability to fund at a high level for a short amount of time. So he looked for non-local partners who wanted to invest in church planting. And then finally, the right plan. The planters that work in his area develop detailed plans, and then they provide ongoing training. As for that 2 years in which the project is continuing, the planter has to attend ongoing training to make sure his skills are sharp, that he has the tools he needs to be successful in that situation in planting the church and becoming, in the future, a partnering church to continue to expand the system. Those are his milestones. The result has been that in Hunt Association, 10 partner churches existed at the start. 17 missions were funded, and they've gone from 68 to 86 churches in 30 months, which is a good pace. In Kauf Van Association, the other association in which he works, there were 7 partner churches to start. Now there are 30 partners. This is probably his greater success. 40% of the total churches now partner in planting. This is over a shorter amount of time that he's been working there. 20 missions have been funded, and they've gone from 62 to 81 churches, 3 Hispanic cells, and 4 multi-housing cells. Those not yet being churches. So he's calling them cells. And reproduction is occurring. Jim is training several Texas associations in his system. Oklahoma and Missouri state staffs have requested versions of Prime for their states. Prime is the name that he gave to his system. And then Jim is training the Hudson Baptist Association in New York State this January. So even as I speak, he's training another association in how to use this material. So to wrap up this first session, it's possible to move a stagnant association towards remarkable growth. Now, that's the first word I want you to catch, is hope. Now, however stagnant your association is, or the associations of your state convention, there's hope. A systematic, strategic plan can turn that around. And amazingly, in a very short amount of time. Considering the glacial pace at which most change occurs, 30 months is a very short amount of time. JK's been working his system about 6 years. That's really not a very long time to see 60% participation from about 3 or 4 churches. Second thing is there are a limited number of problems that you have to solve in order to be successful. Sometimes the mountain seems huge, but actually, the problem set is limited. It's well within the capacity of most associations and state conventions to solve in a systematic way that's simple enough to be grasped and implemented by almost everybody. That's the second thing. The third thing I would draw out of this first session of these case studies is the two leaders hit on a systematic approach That points the way forward for all of us. So I would challenge you as we go through this material, think about your own situation. Things could be different. In the next session, we're going to look in depth at that systematic approach. I'm going to take the first break, session one complete. So I'll let J.D. handle questions.
I don't think, there we go. We've got a few minutes before we can take a moment to break and stretch for a second. What questions do you have for Dan this morning? Someone be brave and daring and break the ice. All right.
This is great. I just moved to a new association 7 months ago. The moderator came to me and said, okay, we have a director of missions, 10 years, we've not planted one single church, he has no vision for church planting. He's 70 years old and just kind of abiding in the system. What can we do? We can maybe church plant, but we have to work around him. And I said, I'm new. Let's talk. I believe in church planting. What is being done to mobilize the directors of missions? Because he is such a key point person. How do I minister to him or challenge him to catch the vision of what you're sharing?
Good question.
My first response is that in the case of Jim Gatliff, he's not the ADOM. He's an associate. And so there at least is, on the part of that association, the understanding that they needed to plant churches, but that the DOM was not really the one who was going to be the point man for the process. And that makes sense in that we have, I think, basically two kinds of ADOMs in the field. Some are more the pastor of pastors. They have a pastoral heart. They're more interested in shepherding. There's a lot of wounded pastors out there that need their care. And it's probably not reasonable to expect them to have a high strategic sense or energy about their ministry. That's not the ministry God's prepared them for. Associations have made that choice. Others are more strategic thinking. They're probably not as good at pastoring the local pastors. I mean, I know in my case, you know, I don't really have that strong shepherd's heart, and so nobody accuses me of being overly compassionate. You know, I was telling the students yesterday, you know, at church renewal, unfortunately, you know, God calls some people to renew churches, but I always find myself thinking, man, it's really sad that this church has declined like that. Let's kill it and start another one. You know, well, that's not the most compassionate response.
Maybe so, we can edit that out. There.
Yeah, mercy's not—it's not my strength. But I think what I've noticed in J.K.'s association is that even those pastors that have not yet partnered in church planting, as they've seen God at work, they affirm that. As they see examples of change, of churches being planted, of energy being renewed in the association, they're proud of their association. They want to say, you know, we're a church planting association. You know, it's that sort of attitude. Yeah, we plant churches. Now, you don't want to inspect their own participation too closely, but they're proud of it. So I would say that in associations that have more of a shepherding director of missions, nevertheless, if his heart is right with God, he's going to affirm and celebrate early successes. So perhaps the examples that I've shared here and others that exist around you would stir his heart to challenge you to come up with a strategy. And probably it's not his role to come up with a strategy. It's probably something he needs to delegate. Another question?
Next question.
In a country already so inundated with churches, do you find that planting these new churches may take away from some of the older dying or declining churches that we already have? And then second, do we know any of the data if these new plants are mostly Christians coming from other churches, or if the congregation is built through evangelism? Do we have any information on that?
In the cases that I'm presenting to you, there's a strong evangelistic requirement in each of the church plants. So they're growing by winning people to Christ from the harvest field. And it's not by transfers. That's something that needs to be determined as you screen church planters to hire to deploy and plant churches, is that they have an evangelistic heart, that they're not going to go after already Christians. And that's not been a problem to this point in the examples I know of. As far as do members shift from dying churches, in the case of these two associations, as far as I know, the new churches are not located in proximity to old churches. Now, that problem is going to come up in an urban setting, no doubt. But what my own experience is, from being a strategist in the Northwest, that worry was always presented. But the kinds of people that want to be a part of this new church plant are different from the people that are comfortable in the older churches in the association. It's very much two different cultures, and maybe this is too strong a word, but the members of the existing churches would find the new churches repellent. They wouldn't like the worship. They wouldn't like the youthfulness of the planter and his propensity to want everybody to be mobilized and active and working. So there's sort of a cultural rebound that protects the old churches. At the same time, when I was in Southern California, what I saw is that no church can assimilate everybody it wins to Christ. No church can. In the case of some of the churches I saw in Southern California, they could only assimilate about 10% of the people they won to Christ. Like I said, I was on staff at Saddleback, and people have varying opinions of it, but it does have a very strong evangelistic ministry. At Easter, they see typically 2,500 people come to Christ at Easter through the evangelistic services they have then. And of those, I'm guessing maybe 10% will be assimilated, but the rest will be assimilated in churches closer to their own religious heritage. So the fact is, when you plant new churches, you're going to bless every church in the association, as well as other evangelical churches in the area, because the people you save in your services may not have a religious heritage that predisposes them to stay. And they'll end up becoming a truly born-again person, going back into another church and bringing new life to that church. I did a study for my doctoral work of churches in the Pacific Northwest, and over about a 50-year period, there was a gap of 100,000 baptized believers that I could come up with between the number of people that were baptized, that won to Christ and baptized in Southern Baptist churches there, and the population of the churches at the time I did the study. And only anecdotally, but the stories I collected of people I knew in the associations I worked with told me that those baptized believers had joined churches closer to their own religious heritage, and we had salted down every evangelical church in Oregon with born-again believers who didn't feel as comfortable in our churches as in something closer to their heritage. That's what happens. And so it's a needless fear, but it's a real fear. So someone has to be able to talk with those pastors, say there's not a reason to be fearful. This is what's happened other places. I think if you'll wait and see, you'll see that it's not going to hurt your church. It's actually going to bless your church.
Well, one more before we stop for about a 5 or 6 minute break. Well, let me ask one then. I'm going to put you on the spot, Dan. You've already mentioned a little bit about your connection to the Northwest, Saddleback as well. Dan's a humble guy, but I am going to ask him to brag on himself for a second for the purpose of helping you to understand where he has come from in his ministry background and ministry experience. It's very important for you to understand where your speaker is coming from. So do you mind sharing with us your work with International Church Planting, training church planting, or church planters here overseas?
Yeah, when I was at Saddleback, we had a church planter training conference. And total, we trained probably 1,000 church planters from all over the U.S. and Canada and 33 countries around the world. And we saw, as we got feedback, that the church planter training that we were giving was being effective worldwide. Also traveled some in Vietnam and in China, Taiwan. There's a tremendous need all over the world for new church planting. The church, in any place where it's been a long time, stabilizes and stagnates. And so this is not a problem unique to Southern Baptists in the United States. It's a problem that's worldwide, wherever the church has been established for some period of time. Okay. Let me take a break.
He's a modest guy. He's been involved. How many church planting teams have been on? Three in the States as well?
Three in the States.
In at least three different geographical locations, cultural regions within the United States context as well.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, and then currently in an academic role teaching, but also serving in a church in the Texas area as well. So I just wanted to pause there for a second just so you could have a background a little bit on Dan, since I know that most of you do not know him and are not aware of his background. Just a couple of words. We'll stop here 6 till the hour. We'll start right back at 9 o'clock. So if you need to stretch, if you want to go run and grab a cup of coffee or something like that, please do so at this time.